Blog Talk Radio.
Gonna tell you a little bedtime tale, legend it will become. Burgers flying out the door, sail on. 2-for-1, no concern for the future, living for today. Fast food bite on your way, lay it all to waste. The masses are afflicted now. Moo, mad cow, mad cow. Mad cow line dance song.
Hey, Sangai Nation, welcome to the show. QT and Sangai with you once again here on a Friday afternoon. We have a great guest for you today, but before we get to that, some show notes. If you are looking for some wrestling tonight, WCWO, as usual, at the Outlaw Arena. 3-2-1 battle up in our neck of the woods in Seattle, Washington. ICW in Kelowna, B.C. Rocky Mountain Pro in Denver, Colorado. RCW in Calgary, Alberta. AWE in Cocoa, Florida. The NWA in Franklin, Kentucky. USA Championship Wrestling in Lebanon, Tennessee tonight. Tomorrow, right here in our neck of the woods in Seattle, CPW at Evolve Fitness. PWB in St. Paul, Minnesota. Rumble for the Kids Benefit Show happening in Princeton, Iowa. The NWA in Jonesboro, Tennessee for a benefit show. ECW in Truman, Arkansas. FPW in Maryville, Indiana. LPW in Clinton, Massachusetts. MCW in Joppa, Maryland. MIW in Forest Lake, Minnesota. WAW in Manchester, New Hampshire. Evolve in Woodside, New York. SWW in Gastonia, North Carolina. RSWF in Memphis, Tennessee. IWR in Dibble, Oklahoma. IZW in Lawton, Oklahoma. And the Legends of the Squared Circle in Lebanon, Ohio. Wrestle Club in Garden City, Idaho. And Pro Wrestling King in Bourbon, Indiana, featuring the debut of that company for Casey Carlisle. So there's lots out there to see and support this week, so get out there and support your local independent. Without further ado, I would like to welcome to the show, his first time with us, the Iceman. Iceman, how are you doing today?
Hey, I'm pretty good. How are you doing?
Doing all right. Since today is your first time with us, we'll start with the first-timer's question. What led to you getting into the business of professional wrestling?
Oh, that was that's easy. Was a fan of it from at a very young age. Me and my grandpa used to watch it every week. I used to go over to my grandparents' house just about every weekend, and it was like every Sunday night ritual, and we sit down, we watch TV, and I just got hooked on it from there.
At what point in time did you say to yourself, this is what you wanted to do as a vocation? You wanted to actually go from fan to performer?
Oh, pretty much right when I first started watching it. I mean, I've always had a thing for, you know, for performing, for, you know, being basically the center of attention, which, you know, used to get me in trouble in school growing up. But no, pretty much right from the get-go, just soon as I started watching it, I was like, I want to do that. And I even remember telling my grandpa, I'm going to do that someday.
You talked about always performing and so forth. Besides wrestling and incorporating it into your wrestling, really, you're an extensive dancer. Can you tell us a little bit how you got into dancing, and even more specifically, how you got into dance-off in wrestling championships?
Yeah, dancing is just something that I've can always remember doing. I'd enter, you know, different talent shows and whatnot, and always do, you know, have dance routines. I was I was always at every school dance, and I never took any like lessons. But I just always danced. It just came natural to me. So when I got into wrestling, I decided to make a dance element, you know, part of my character and my gimmick, even include it in some of my matches, as far as like in my move sets and stuff. As far as like the dance championship goes, that was just an extension of the Iceman gimmick whenever I was with Metro Pro for like 3 years. Come out with a big dance trophy and defended it at every show as kind of an open challenge kind of thing, to where I'd call, you know, I'd just lay it out there. You come out, try to take my trophy. We'd have a dance off, and the dance off would usually lead right into a match.
Now, how many wrestlers specifically sought out the dance championship as something they wanted to have, even more so than the actual company wrestling championships? Because I'm sure a lot of people sought that specific title out as something they wanted.
No, you know, not really. I never had anybody actually challenge me for it. I just was always willing to put it on the line because I was confident enough in my dance skills to keep the title and hold on to it and eventually retire the dance championship, still in my possession.
Now, you got into the business in the very early 2000s, correct?
Yeah, I started training. I went to a wrestling school later in the fall of 1999, and then made my debut January of 2000, I believe.
Now, wrestling in the early 2000s was a very different animal than it is today. There's been a lot of changes since when you started training to what we have today in today's current landscape. One of the things that the business has tried to clean up and police more so in the last 10 to 12 years is steroids. It has always been around. It's been there since the 60s in professional wrestling. There's been times when it's been in the media more so than others, but it's always sort of been there. Do you see steroids as still a problem in today's professional wrestling, or do you think that we've cleaned the majority of it up from 10 years ago when it started to really become known what the steroids could do long-term health-wise?
I don't know. I don't see much of it as a problem on the independent level, but it's clearly obvious to some of the guys who are on TV, you know, that they're on it. I'd say it's still probably, you know, a pretty active thing. It's just not, I don't know. It's not looked at as much anymore. I mean, unless, you know, some sort of a health issue comes out of it. You know, I think a lot of the times when somebody gets, you know, busted for, you know, the wellness policy issue or whatever, they say it may be, you know, marijuana or pills or something. And not saying that those things are not part of the issue, but I think most of the time it could be, you know, some sort of a performance enhancing drug that they got caught for. But that's just me assuming. But I still think that steroids is still a pretty decent part of the world of wrestling.
One of the things that we have up here, it's starting to catch on with a lot of the local wrestlers in the Northwest where we're based, is tea drinking. A lot of wrestlers have been taking to an antioxidant post-match tea. We've seen a lot of T-infusers pop out of gear bags recently. Is tea drinking something that's catching on in your area?
No, I've never heard of that.
Must be a Northwest thing, I think.
I think so, yeah.
Obviously, in independent wrestling, wrestlers' diets vary quite a bit. Some people are extremely strict with their diet. Some people are more loose on the independents. Do you have a particular set diet that you use to maintain ring shape?
My dieting is always kind of hit and miss. Just like a couple of years ago, for example, I was walking around at about 160, 165 and in pretty good shape. I was fairly strict with my diet then. Now I'm right around the 185 mark. I always try to stick with as healthy foods as possible. And, you know, I'm in the gym 4 or 5 times a week, sometimes 6 times a week. Because as I get older, it does take a little bit more work to stay in shape. And, and once in a while, there may be a gap of, from one show to the next to where, you don't get an opportunity to stay active in the ring as much. So, I just try to be smart about what I eat. So, I'm not, as of right now, I'm not on a strict diet per se. I just try to make smart choices. I try to stay away from the double cheeseburgers and whatnot, even though they're real good. But I try to stay away from those and lean more towards, your salads and your wraps and different things like that.
What would you say has been the strangest diet that you've encountered in your career from a fellow wrestler?
Shoot. I've seen guys try to do like the zero carb diet where they, completely eliminate all breads and fruits that, contain a lot of carbohydrates and stuff. And, what some people, end up finding out is that is very, can damage the body really. And you need a lot of strength and energy to do what we do. When you deplete your carbs, it depletes your energy and eventually depletes your strength. So, I've seen, there's the Atkins diet and different things like that. We do have to be in spandex. So it is kind of, some guys take a lot of pride in themselves. So they do some pretty extreme things such as that. So.
One of the more controversial aspects in the last few years in professional wrestling is blood. It's always been part of professional wrestling. It's a physical contact sport, so there's always going to be the occasional blood in a match. But a lot of people have decided they don't want to see blood in wrestling because of all the bloodborne illnesses that are out there and health issues, and it's become something of a controversial topic. What's your stance on blood in professional wrestling as it relates to the current landscape here in 2017?
If it makes sense, if somebody's in a street fight type of match or no holds barred, something like that, hardcore kind of stuff, then, obviously, realistically, a guy can only take getting hit in the head so many times before he's going to legit bleed or whatever. It's definitely different. Like when I was growing up, I remember used to see guys like Ric Flair and Dusty Rhodes and stuff like that bleed, profusely at almost every match. But now, I think some blood is okay. But having, every match or every show or anything like that, I'm not really a big fan of an over usage of blood. If it makes sense, the story to the match, then yeah, sure. I'm all for it.
something else that became controversial in the last few months and was in the wrestling news for a while was intergender wrestling. The New York Athletic Commission tried to stop an intergender match, which eventually was allowed to happen, but there is a outbreak of people on both sides of the issue of intergender wrestling. Do you do very many intergender matches yourself?
If my memory serves me correct, I think I've only been in one intergender match, and that was probably 2-3 years ago. Now, of course, I've been part of matches, you know, where it's, you know, mixed tag, but, you know, for the most part, we follow the rules of men versus men, women versus women whenever we do the mixed tag. But I believe I've only been in one intergender match, and I lost that, I'm sad to say, but I did. I mean, I think, once again, that's something that doesn't need to be used all the time. If it's good for the story at that time, then so be it. But I'm not a huge fan of it, just because, you know, I'm not a fan at all of, you know, like domestic abuse and stuff. And with the way the world is today, you know, some people might look at that. They don't want to suspend their disbelief is what I'm trying to say, to the fact of, hey, this is just entertainment. Some people may look at intergender matches as, you know, just another form of domestic abuse and take it to a whole nother level. So
one of the more pleasant aspects for a lot of professional wrestlers is the interaction they have with their fans. What's been your favorite memory of fan interaction so far?
Oh, it has to be any time I interact with kids. You know, kids that are right around that 9-10-year-old age, if not just a little bit younger, just coming up to you and, you know, kind of scared to talk to you because they don't, you know, not for sure, you know, about you, basically. But I love interacting with the kids because, you know, they come up to you and, you know, they want to high five you. They want pictures with you. You know, they want to talk to you. You know, they want to, you know, I've had kids say, oh, I'm going to grow up and be a wrestler one day. And just the look on their faces, you know, because they have no idea that, you know, I'm just a regular guy that, you know, that gets up every morning, drinks my coffee, you know, do whatever job is on the line for the day, and, you know, and that kind of stuff. You know, they look at you like, you know, you're a real life, come to life superhero, just like they, you know, do, you know, with the people that are like a WWE and stuff like that. So I'd say I get a huge kick out of interacting with the kids.
When you go into a company for the first time, do you try to get a feel for what their fan base is? Do you prefer to wrestle in companies that are more family friendly, or do you wrestle for companies that are geared more towards adult crowds, or do you try to mix it, or does it not really come into play when you're looking at a company?
It doesn't really come into play whenever I'm looking into a company or talking to a company about coming to work for them. I can adjust to pretty much anything. I mean, if I go to a company and it's just nothing but family friendly, then I can do family friendly. If it's more adult oriented, then I can definitely go with that. And, you know, I use my experience as a DJ, which is what I do outside of wrestling. You know, I've DJed all sorts of different situations where I've DJed at bars where a bunch of drunken idiots at times, and then I've DJed Sweet 16 parties with a bunch of teenage kids, you know. So, and I adjust to those accordingly. So I kind of treat going to wrestle for different companies the same way.
When you go to the more adult shows, do you find that it's a little bit harder to get them to react to what you normally do as opposed to if it was a more mixed crowd that might have a more varied taste in what they like in wrestling?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. If you go to a show that's more adult oriented, 9 times out of 10, they're wanting to make themselves part of the show. If you go to somewhere where it's more of a mixed crowd, then you don't have as many people who try to make themselves part of the show, because there's more kids and stuff around. But I think it's a little more difficult at times to put on the quality show that I like to put on at the ones that are more adult oriented, just because, like I said, they may want to make themselves part of the show instead of actually watching the show and enjoying what they're watching. It's like, you paid money for your ticket to come watch us do what we do, but yet you're trying to make yourself part of it. To me, that's kind of ridiculous, but.
I'm sure since you've been around for 16 years or so at this point, you've been to a wide range of different venues. Do you have a particular favorite venue that you've wrestled in your career?
Oh, yes, absolutely. One of them would be the Civic Arena in St. Joseph, Missouri, which is like an hour or so east from where I live. Big, huge arena. I think it holds up to like 8,000, 10,000 people. That was with the company I very first started with back in the early 2000s. That was one of my favorite places to go because anytime we did a show there, that was like our WrestleMania. And the promoter would try to run shows there twice a year. So we always treated those as like our big shows, like a Royal Rumble, WrestleMania kind of feel, your big shows a year. So that to me will always be my number one favorite place to work at. Another place I really liked to work at was when I was with Metro Pro Wrestling in Kansas City. It was at a place called the Turner Rec Center. It would only hold roughly about 300 people, but the atmosphere was just so awesome that those 300 seemed like 3,000 or more. Just because, everybody was a little more intimate, it was a little more close. Just great atmosphere, great setting. The lighting was perfect. And then currently, I work for the new company that just started in Kansas City, the NWL, and we're at a place called the Scottish Rite Temple, which is more of a theater type of setting. So you got the ring set right in front of the stage, and then so you got balcony seating, you got your front row seating, you got what they call the orchestra seating. So everybody's like all on one side, and it's got a really good vibe to it as well. So those are probably my three favorite places that I've ever wrestled at. So,
on a similar vein, as anyone that has ever wrestled professionally knows, rings can also vary greatly. Do you have a particular favorite ring that you've been able to wrestle in so far?
My favorite ring to wrestle in would have to be the one at NWL. There's really nothing soft about a wrestling ring, but since I have worked in various types of rings over the years, it's probably the easiest one to get slammed on, if that makes sense. I've wrestled in some that felt like I would have rather have taken a slam on the concrete sidewalk than to get slammed in a ring. And then there's others where, like the one at the NWL, that it's almost feels like getting slammed on a bed. Still hurts, don't get me wrong, but, I'd have to say that right now the ring at NWL is probably my favorite one to work in.
Something else that's always going to be controversial in wrestling, and it has been since the very start of pro wrestling, continues to be so today, is dating amongst fellow wrestlers. Obviously, there are married couples in wrestling. There are boyfriend, girlfriends in wrestling, and all kinds of situations have occurred because of this. What's your stance on dating amongst people in the business?
I don't have an issue with it at all. Back when I was single, I dated somebody that was in the business. So I don't see anything wrong with it at all. So
one of the things in professional wrestling, as far as the national companies goes, is they have more or less phased out managers by and large. On the independent scene, you still see a good number of managers, some of them very, very good at what they do. Do you have a stance on the impact that managers should be making nationally? And do you see in your area a lot of good managers that are still trying to apply their craft?
Yeah, I think now it would be a good time for managers to make a comeback. You know, WWE don't have really hardly any at all. I remember, you know, growing up that, you know, I used to hate a lot of the managers just as much as I hated some of the wrestlers. You know, I got to meet one of my all-time favorite managers. I've met him a couple of times, working on a couple of shows with him, Jim Cornette. Probably one of the best managers out there, you know, outside of like Bobby the Brain Heenan. I think managers like that should be in wrestling today. I know there was a time where they kind of got away from it and it was fine, but I think now would be a good time because there's a lot of wrestlers out there who are good in the ring but not good on the microphone. So they need a mouthpiece. So that's where I think a manager, you know, comes in and would be a good asset. And on the indie scene, I've encountered a good portion of good and bad. There's only a couple of real good managers on the indie scene that I can think of. One that pops into my head right now that I absolutely love working with. He to me is probably one of the best managers on the indie scene, and his name is Travis Cook. He lives, I think, down around the St. Louis area or in St. Louis. So he embodies what a manager should do. As a matter of fact, there was one show that I worked over in Illinois to where the first time I got to meet Jim Cornette, he was a special guest there at that show. And Travis Cook worked on that show as well. And him and Jim Cornette had a verbal exchange in the ring before, you know, the wrestlers got involved and whatnot like that. And it was phenomenal. So to see Travis Cook stand toe-to-toe with Jim Cornette and verbally spar with him, in my mind, made him one of my favorite indie managers on the out there on the indie scene right now.
Another aspect that a lot of times the fans overlook that is vital to a good wrestling show, and you see a wide gamut in this on the independent level, is the ring announcer. A bad ring announcer can really hurt a show and how it comes off to the fans. A good announcer can take a bad show and make it a little bit more enjoyable for the fans. Who are some of the better ring announcers out there that you've come across?
Oh my gosh. I've encountered a lot of ring announcers. And yeah, I totally agree. I have worked so many shows where the ring announcers are so bad that I would rather just introduce myself than listen to them do it, because essentially the ring announcer is the hype man for the show. You know, they're pretty much the first person the fans see when the show starts. You know, and they're the person that they see the most. You know, the ring announcer is in and out of the ring more than anybody else on a show than, you know, than most referees. Oh my gosh. Yeah. There's just been, there's a few around here in the Midwest that I've encountered that are pretty good. There are some that are good people, bad ring announcers, very monotone and no excitement, you know, and it makes me want to fall asleep, you know, before they get done announcing somebody. But, not really one particular, you know, that I like or dislike. I've encountered a good portion of good ones and bad ones.
One of the things that I've always noticed in independent wrestling is a lot of the fans tend to gravitate towards liking the style of wrestling that was around in the territorial day in their particular area. Like upper Midwest tend to really get into the more scientific wrestling like the AWA did. Northeast fans like a lot of the bigger, hard-hitting guys, so forth, so on. Do you find a lot of the fans in your area tending to prefer the style of shows that more closely resemble what they would see in, say, the St. Louis territory or the Kansas City territory?
Yeah. It varies in different parts of the Midwest. Just like you mentioned, down around, I've wrestled a lot down around the St. Louis area. And down there, you know, that's where they had, I don't know if you remember, you know, wrestling at the Chase. That was big in the 50s and 60s. Harley Race went through there a lot, and early days of Ric Flair down through there and whatnot. So that style down around that area, a lot of people like that more of the old school style, you know, where it's, you know, there's some hard hits, but then there's like a lot of rest holds, and, you know, you still run into some fans that like, you know, some of the more modern stuff, more the high flying and different things like that. In the Kansas City area, it's a nice mix. I feel the fans appreciate the Ring of Honor style, you know, where it's like move for move for moves. They also appreciate good storytelling, you know, like a Harley Race or something like that. So, it just depends. I don't know if there's, you know, to say where more fans gravitate more towards one or the other. If you're in the heart of St. Louis, then it's definitely more of that old school 50s, 60s, type of wrestling that people like.
At this time, my co-host QT Vokes is standing by. I know QT has some questions, so I'm going to turn the interview over to QT.
Okay.
Thank you, Sungai. Hello, Mr. Iceman.
Hello.
Mr. Iceman, we usually start out the second part of the show by asking the following question. What's the hardest knife-edge chop you've received inside the ring?
Oh, that would have to be from my trainer. His name is Michael Strider. He's based out of Kansas City. He's kind of semi-retired right now. But he, in my opinion, he's probably the number one person who's ever delivered the hardest chop. He also liked to do back chops as well. So not only did I take one to the chest many, many times, but he'd occasionally throw in one of them back chops as well. He's probably delivered the hardest ones. Probably, and then the second person I'd say that's ever delivered the hardest one to me would have to be a guy that I'm kind of in a feud with right now and have been off and on over the years. His name is Superstar Steve Fender. He's from right outside of Columbia, Missouri, which is not too far from like St. Louis area. He was trained by Harley Race. So those two guys probably deliver the hardest chops that I've ever had.
Oh, now I've heard that Harley Race used to deliver a mean knife edge chop. Harley Race.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I've never received one from him, but I've heard that as well from a lot of the people who have trained under him. So when you see, like I said, going back to Steve, when you see Steve Fender throw one or receive one from him, then you know exactly where he got taught. I mean, who taught him how to throw one.
Wow, okay. Well, I've never heard of a back knife-edge chop before. It never occurred to me that you could knife-edge chop someone in the back. Because during our broadcasts, I've always thought and asked questions about the front knife-edge chop.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really much of a – I mean, it may vary some from, you know, actual knife-edge, but it's still just as painful, I think.
Oh, okay. Well, what is the hardest knife-edge chop you've received outside the ring?
I don't ever really try to take them too far outside the ring there. I don't.
Okay.
I mean, unless it's been in a match, you know.
Yeah.
Now, of course, if you're in a match and you work outside the ring, then the chops. Well, this probably goes back to Michael Strider. Not only does he chop hard in the ring, but if we are outside of the ring closer to the fans, he chops even harder than what he does in, because we're that much closer to the fans and you want them to experience and basically feel what the person receiving feels. And he believes in that full force.
Wow. All right. Okay. All right. Well, Iceman, I saw your YouTube video entitled "A Message from the Iceman About Coffee." At the 13-second mark of this video, you said that the day before you had no coffee and that your day was crap. This day obviously tied for the fewest cups of coffee that the Iceman consumes in a day. But what is your high limit or record or most amount of cups of coffee in a single day?
I have been known to drink a whole pot of coffee myself, which my coffee pot at home can hold, I think, 12 cups.
Wow, 12 cups. Okay.
But now, keep in mind, I don't use regular size coffee cups. So it could be 6 big cups, but still equal 12, if that makes sense.
Oh, okay. Very good. All right. I myself was up to like 13 to 14 big cups on the Coast Guard ships that I served on to keep me awake. Yes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And by the way, thank you for serving.
Oh, well, thank you. And that begs another question. Have you ever drank a cup of coffee on a ship while it was rolling 10 degrees from port to starboard?
I have not.
Oh, okay. That's what I thought your answer would be. Yes. Okay. All right. All right. Well, from now on, keep bearing in mind that one day where you had no coffee, are you going to take with you in the mornings when you head out the door a plastic sandwich bag with just the right amount of freeze-dried coffee to get you through the day should you not have access to regular drink coffee? And will that freeze-dried coffee be Sanka?
Sanka sucks.
Oh, okay.
I'm more of a Folgers kind of guy.
Oh, all right. Okay.
And okay. If I happen to leave the house and don't have any coffee and don't go get any coffee, then I usually turn to either a Red Bull or a Monster at that point.
Oh, okay. All right. All right. Now, are you a big fan of the sitcom Seinfeld?
I've watched it occasionally.
Oh, okay. I only brought up the subject of freeze-dried coffee because Jerry once had a librarian policeman stop by his apartment, and Jerry offered him a cup of tea, and the librarian policeman goes, "Do you have any coffee?" And so Jerry said, no, I don't have any coffee. And the librarian was kind of talking in a tough cop manner, which only librarian cops can. Well, what about freeze-dried coffee? No, I don't have any freeze-dried coffee. Why don't you have any freeze-dried coffee? It's crystals. You keep it on the shelf. It stays forever. It's crystallized. He was kind of talking in that dragnet mode. Are you familiar with the Dragnet series from the 1960s?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I highly recommend that you look up on the YouTube video, Jerry Seinfeld offers librarian policeman coffee. You'll get a kick out of that.
Okay, I'll do that. I'm always looking for something to watch while I'm doing some cardio at the gym when I'm on the treadmill and stuff. So.
Oh, okay. The librarian's name was Mr. Ironically enough, Mr. Bookman. Yes, Mr. Bookman. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, well, Mr. Iceman, I also saw your YouTube video entitled ACH versus Iceman Metro Pro Wrestling Match, and I was wondering if you heard the rumors that ACH once took private dance lessons from WWE superstar Scotty Too Hotty.
I have not heard that rumor. No, I have not.
Oh, okay.
And I'll have to ask him about that the next time I see him.
Yes, if you could ask him that from QT Vokes. Oh, okay. Well, that was quite the dance off that you had, and I was saddened that you lost your trophy, your dance trophy. Very saddened.
Yeah.
ACH.
I lost it, but yet I had it at the very next show because I protested the way the match finished. And so I was able to get my dance trophy back.
Oh, okay. Wow, all right. I got to tell you, though, ACH had some fairly good moves. I got to give it to him, okay?
Yeah, I got to give it to him as well. That was probably one of the funner dance-offs into a match that I had during my whole run as the dance champion. That was probably one of the funner ones.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Iceman, I also saw your YouTube video called The Chill Factor 527-14. In the video, you came to us live from the gym you work at. You said the one thing that irritates you is that you have regular working hours at the gym. Anytime you are seen before these hours, people seem to think that you're there to work. You said if you see me before my regular work hours, it means you are working out, and that at that point you had only 26 weeks to go before your first bodybuilding show. You said you were very grateful for the people that come to your gym, but if it's a holiday and you have the day off, then I'm working out, or if it's a regular business day and it's before 10 o'clock, I'm here to work out. If you want to talk business, by all means, holler at your box after 10 o'clock. So with that being said, get with it, join the movement. I've joined the movement of don't stop till you die. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I actually forgot about that video.
Oh.
But
he went on to say, keep doing what you do, love what you do, and give it all you can every single day.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. That's something I believe in every single day. And it used to irritate me, you know, when I'd be in there, you know, 'cause I only had so much time to work out each day. And just a little side note, at that time I was training for my first ever bodybuilding show. However, I did not complete the training and did not end up entering my first ever show. I can't quite remember reason why. It may have been from a injury or something, but I gave it a shot. It is training for a bodybuilding show is a whole different ballgame. I mean, it's for the people who do it, and I have a lot of friends who do compete in bodybuilding. they got my utmost respect. It's a hard thing to do. But yeah, it's in a small town that I live. It's even if you go in and work out on your day off or before actual business hours, people, if they see you, they automatically want to try to conduct business. And you know, you can't rush them off or be mean to them because then you're hurting your business. Right. So as much as it irritated me, I still did it because, you know, it was good for business.
Oh, okay. Now, was weightlifting something that you were interested in a kid, like when you were in junior high school or high school?
No. I weightlifted a little bit and whatnot, but I never was into it, never really liked it much whenever I was a kid. I didn't really start getting into it until probably about 2002, 2003, I really started kind of getting into it. So I was already into wrestling about 2 or 3 years at that point. Realized I was kind of out of shape, definitely not in ring shape. That's when I was still actually training a lot in the ring as well. So that's when I really started getting into working out.
Oh, all right. Okay. Now, when you did start your weightlifting program in preparation for that contest, I'm pretty sure you probably went on YouTube and looked at successful weightlifters. And everyone, of course, they claim that the gold standard is from Arnold Schwarzenegger. However, have you heard of a weightlifter that from Cuba that was nicknamed the Myth? And he was Sergio Olivier, and he beat Arnold Schwarzenegger for Mr. Olympia in 1969. Are you aware of the Myth?
I have heard of him, yes.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, in that contest in 1969, Mr. Olympia, Sergio Olivier was going up toward the stage, mounting these stairs, and Arnold said he got a good look at his back, and it looked like his traps were something out of a cartoon where someone had taken an air pump and just pumped air into his body. And it looked like a big manta ray, the lats on his back. And at that moment, Arnold knew that he was pretty much beat. That was about the only time that Arnold, before he even got to the stage, felt defeated. I encourage
right.
you to look up Sergio Olivier in a Wikipedia
okay.
search. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Well, now let me see my... you also said in that video, leave the word "I can't" by the door when you leave the house because you can. I like that quote. Yes.
Yes. Yeah, because if you leave your house each and every day with already the thought of "I can't do this" or "I can't do that," then you are going to have a bad day. You're already defeated. I read that quote somewhere, and that's been one of the many quotes that I like using. And I think as small amount of words it is in that quote, I think it speaks volumes.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, you mentioned to Sign Guy earlier that you were always interested in dance, and you danced in high school when they offered the dances. My question is, did you ever watch Lawrence Welk as a kid? And if so, did you like the dance team of Bobby and Sissy, the tap dancers?
Lawrence Welk was way before my time.
Oh, okay. Uh-oh, I think I just dated myself. Because my parents were a big fan of Lawrence Welk, and boy, when those dancers came on, Bobby and Sissy, they really put on a show. My parents really enjoyed them, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm familiar with who Lawrence Welk is, but I don't remember watching any of the shows or anything. Like I said, a little bit before my time, I think.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Iceman, did you know that the bass player of Kiss, Gene Simmons, once entered a chubby checker dance contest in junior high school, and he danced the twist, and he won that contest. Gene Simmons of Kiss.
I did not know that, but I could definitely see him doing that, for sure.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. If you look up Gene Simmons' autobiography, well, you've got pretty much have to buy his book, best-selling book, Sex, Money, and Kiss, to find out that nugget of wisdom about him. Okay.
Okay.
You won a dance contest. Okay. I also saw your YouTube video entitled My Magnificent Obsession, Motivational Speech. What struck me about this video is your cool shirt that even Carlito would think is cool, and he would not spit a chewed up apple at you. This shirt said, I've got flex appeal.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You said that you tried to be as good of and in this video, you said you also tried to be as good a father as possible. I like that. Yes.
Yes.
And
yeah,
you also
absolutely.
In this video, you mentioned a story about a power lifter who doctors said would never lift again, but he went on to have a successful career.
Yeah, absolutely. That's C.T. Fletcher. He's one of my favorite bodybuilders, motivational speakers. I subscribe to his YouTube channel. His story, he actually has a documentary. It's out on Netflix, and I've only watched bits and pieces of it, but it's called My Magnificent Obsession. And so after listening to a motivational speech that he gave some students somewhere entitled the same thing, My Magnificent Obsession, it got me to thinking what my magnificent obsession is. And so in turn, that's what the video was about, just stuff that was on my mind, what I was, the word obsessed is a bad word, a bad term, but you can also be obsessed about things in a good way. So, and that's what makes them magnificent, and so because of him, that prompted my video, and there you have it. So.
Wow. All right. Okay. Now,
I have to warn you, if you watch any of C.T. Fletcher's videos and cuss words offend you, he may not be your guy because he has zero filter. But I like that because it's real, so if you watch it, don't watch it around kids. But and like I said, if you're easily offended by it, I wouldn't recommend listening. But to me, it's real, it's unfiltered. He's speaking from the heart each and every time he posts a video. So.
Oh, okay. All right. I do enjoy stories like that about people overcoming the odds to be successful. Did you ever hear the story of one of America's pioneering mile runners back in the 1930s who was threatening to run a four-minute mile? He got down to 4 minutes and four minutes and 4 seconds. However, as a kid, he lived in Kansas, and one of his jobs was to light the stove in the schoolhouse with some kerosene. And he badly burned his legs, and the doctor said that he would probably have a hard time ever walking again. Yet, through determination, he became one of our best milers of the 1930s and early 40s. And he probably would have been the first man to break that four-minute mile had he not burned his legs so bad. Glenn Cunningham.
Okay. No, I've never heard of him, but that sounds like a great story, though.
Oh, okay. Yes, Glenn Cunningham. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, Mr. Iceman, it's getting toward the end of the show, And I do hope you had success looking up that Seinfeld video with the freeze-dried coffee. Is there anything you'd like to plug and promote before we go off the air? Your favorite banana, your favorite freeze-dried coffee, which we probably have done, that you don't like, Sanka?
I mean, the only thing I got to plug is, you know, if anybody's interested in knowing more about me, you know, they can find me on Facebook, Twitter, obviously my YouTube channel. If they want to follow any of the companies that I wrestle for, currently I am signed on with the NWL, which is the National Wrestling League, and they're based in Kansas City, Missouri. I definitely looked them up. They got a great product. We just recently signed a TV deal here in the Midwest. I also work for a company down by the Lake of the Ozarks in Missouri, which is pretty much a Harley Race company. It's a company called New Breed Wrestling. We here in a couple of weeks, we're getting ready to have a show here in my hometown in the first weekend of May. So, I mean, that's really, really about all I got to plug, you know? And yeah, that's about it. So yeah, you can just find me on Facebook under, you know, you can just find, the Iceman. You can follow me on there on Twitter. It's, at the Iceman for Eva. That's, the Iceman, the number 4 EVA. And then, of course, I'm on Instagram and Periscope and all other kinds of social media outlets.
Right. Well, Mr. Iceman, it's been a pleasure. Hopefully we can do this again someday. And I wish you luck in your information search about the myth, Sergio Olivier. I think that will give you some inspiration. Yes.
Okay, yeah, I'll definitely look it up. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Have a good day, and cut down on the coffee slightly.
Sure, no problem. Okay. Thank you guys for having me on.
Oh, thank you. It's been a pleasure. Bye now.
Okay, bye-bye.
Once a minute.